Welcome to CBAW Loves, a book club podcast from Community Building Artworks. I'm Seema Ressa.
And I'm Amelia Bain. Each episode, Seema and I will invite a rotating cast of fellow writers and artists to discuss a book that we love.
We hope you'll read along and join the conversation. Hi, Amelia. I'm so excited we're doing this.
Me too. I feel like we have had an unofficial, just friendship book club for a long time, but now to have an official book club and a podcast.
It's so exciting because it's like, I think so often you'll recommend a book to me that then becomes the book that I'm pressing into other people's hands. Like, oh, you've got to read this. And I love sort of tracing the history of how a book arrived for me. And so it's exciting to like, how often, first of all, that it traces back to you. And then it's exciting to like be able to share it, to be that person maybe for more people.
Yeah. Sometimes I am just like reading a book and I'm like, Seema's got to read this. That happens for me constantly.
Yeah. It's so interesting, right? Because obviously reading is a super solitary experience. Like you watch TV with other people, you watch movies with other people. But there's something like really, really intimate about sharing that brain space.
So Seema, you and I first met in grad school. So we were doing a lot of reading because we had to, but also because we wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, we were in grad school because we wanted an excuse to pay someone tens of thousands of dollars to tell us to read.
Yeah.
I really appreciate academia in many ways, but I think one of the best things I got from grad school was our friendship. And the book, you know, like that's been my continuing education in a lot of ways. Like, you know, you're reading about different things than me.
Even though we were studying different things, so often there was overlap in what was relevant or not even relevant, but just recommending books from each other's list of books that we'd compiled to read ourselves. Like reading something from yours would unlock something for me and maybe the other way around for you.
Oh, completely. And, you know, and of course, in grad school, we kept annotations of all of these books that we were reading. When I go back and look at those annotations, so much of what I'm writing about the book is our conversations first, like whatever it is you said to me to get to me to read the book. And then like, you know, the long walks and drives and times that we would spend just being like pouring over these ideas. When you read something, you absorb the information one way. And then when you talk about it with someone, you almost create new knowledge for yourself.
Yeah. There have been a few books that I recommended to you like almost a decade ago that were really important to me at that time in my understanding of what I was studying and just like my understanding of the world. And I recommended them to you and then proceeded to forget about them. And you years later will say, well, remember this book. That's another good reason to recommend books to friends is to have a little path back to them yourself.
It's one of my great panics is that life is so short and I'll never read everything. It's really nice to have like some people I rely on to tell me, okay, definitely read this. So like we go out and we read a different set of books. I don't know. I feel like we get this sort of efficiency layer where we get to look at all kinds of things and then be like, okay, no, really, really, really.
Yeah.
Like take my recommendation, read this one. Yeah, you said that our friendship is 50% pranks and 50% book recommendations. And I love that so much. I don't know. Like there's this sort of idea of reading as something that's like really heady and solitary. And it can be, but I feel like the best reading that I do makes me a better person in the world. Helps me understand other people better.
Yeah, makes you more empathetic, makes you more aware of just like the other ways people look at the world.
Yeah, the interiority of other people, right? Like the valuing the interiority of other people, I think is such an essential part of like not being an asshole. Yeah, we all know that, right? Like that, you know, reading makes you more empathetic in literature and the arts. But I'm excited to put it into this practice where we're centering reading or the ideas that other contemporary artists are grappling with as a jumping point for conversation and community. I'm really, 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 really excited about the book that we've chosen for our very first book. I think I came across it late last year, ordered it on my Kindle, read it fast as lightning. The editor of the book, Listening in the Dark, Amber Tamlin, talks about there's like this moment right now where people are, women in particular, are reclaiming their intuition. And they're beginning to look for, like, look to one another to make visible what maybe had been siloed and invisible before. And reading all of these different perspectives, no two are the same. I kept feeling like a sliver of me was seen here, a sliver of me was seen there, you know, or recognizing something in each of these essays and feeling empowered actually by the collection to like begin this process of, or continue this process, or maybe have more zeal towards this process of being like, you know what, I need to pay attention to this too in myself.
And because it is a collection and it's not just one person writing about their experience with it. Yeah. I think I also felt empowered to like figure out how I felt about it and add my voice and my perspective to that, that set of perspectives on intuition.
Yes, exactly. There was not like a single answer or a single experience of it that spoke to the experience of intuition.
So our first episode, we're so lucky. We have an interview with Listening in the Dark contributor, Dr. Mindy Netafi.
Mindy's a poet, professional teaching artist, somatic therapist. She specializes in trauma healing and expression. And it was awesome to get to talk to her.
Yeah. So we'll just get right into the conversation.
I mean, when I talk to people about this book, one of the things that's so great about it is that it is a collection of perspectives from so many different women on a subject that for some of us is pretty radical, which is this sort of like reckoning with the power of intuition and what it is and what it isn't, and how we perceive it differently, how we come into relationship with it. I remember when Amber first reached out to see if I'd be interested in writing something for it. We had a conversation on the phone where she was really initially interested in like, what was the first time you remember having an experience that you would call an experience of your intuition? Or like, she was just like interested in hearing more about how people arrived at their own understanding of it. I really tried. I sort of like dug in deep and I was like, gosh, did I have experiences of intuition when I was a kid? And there are some incredible wild stories in here of people, you know, people's arrival at that first experience, kind of the origin story of their own intuition. But for me, I was really drawn, just the thing immediately I sort of didn't want to write about, but that I knew I needed to maybe write about by how strongly I maybe didn't want to write about it, was really my first experience of just total failure, it was both an experience of an explosion of intuition and also at the same time, like a massive failure of intuition, which didn't happen for me until I was in my my Saturn return, like early 30s, you know, like right in that hinge of like coming into adulthood, realizing that I had been living in a way pretty profoundly disconnected from a part of myself and from what maybe I would eventually come to understand as my own intuition, or what I sometimes call like, it's like a physical intelligence or a cellular intelligence or some sort of like deep innate sense that each of us have of what is right for us, right? It's not, I can't tell what's right for you necessarily, my intuition can't just sort of like move outside of me and make like these wild, you know, or broad judgments, but I can access it and listen to it in order to sort of discern what is the right choice for me, like right now. Mm-hmm. So I tell a story, I sort of tell that story in the book of just like, first of all, the total disaster of sort of realizing that I had been in a relationship, for a romantic relationship, that I needed to leave, but that I didn't do that. I didn't leave. I got married instead. And then sort of almost immediately after, began to have experiences of this sort of like breakthrough intuitive knowing that that I could no longer ignore, and then having to like change my life. That experience was so life-changing and powerful for me I became incredibly curious about why we are like this, like, or certainly why I was like this, like what happened to separate me from myself so profoundly. And also like, what is going on with humans? Like, how can we have so many different parts of us that are up to so many different things? And how do I tell the difference between the voice of my intuition and the voice of my fear?
Yeah. And so, you know, so I had a very similar experience. I stayed married for a while. But I knew as I was getting married, like, oh, I don't want to do this. But there's another part of me that was like, but I should do this. Mm. And I fought it and fought through it for so long. But it wasn't until I stopped fighting through it that I could say, oh, that's what that feeling was. And now I must, like, now I know.
And each of us in a way has this like personal experience of, with something that is also like collective and cultural, which is sort of how women have been systematically in some ways, devalued, or certainly this kind of embodied intelligence or intuitive intelligence has been devalued and even considered, right? Just the oppositional tension of calling like one thing rational and another thing irrational. What's rational and what's irrational? Well, women, the body, feelings, all of that gets sort of like put over in this irrational column, and we're considered to be sort of less consistent or less stable. You know, there's like really deep, deep cultural beliefs. And maybe how most of us experience it personally is in some ways how we feel, you know, like we were conditioned to be people pleasers, to be kind or to be submissive. That kind of conditioning is sort of fundamental to this conversation in terms of like, well, you don't just come out sort of knowing how to be yourself and stand in your power. That's something that has to be like actively learned and integrated. And if instead you're really in an environment when you're young where it, in order to survive, you need to be compliant in some way, especially in ways where it sets up this opposition between like your authentic expression, right, versus what it's going to take to stay in attachment relationships or to fit in. And then we just slowly like start disconnecting from our authentic self and those impulses. And that's how you find yourself like as a grown-ass woman in a job or in a relationship or like in some kind of situation that you don't can actually fully consent to or want to be in.
Right. Yeah. And it's because in a way you've been conditioned, like all of your surroundings are telling you it's safer to not feel what you feel. And to like, there is such a value placed on being rational, which is totally disconnecting yourself and just being a brain, and convince yourself that like the safe thing to do is go along. Yeah.
And the path to a certain kind of power is, you know, I spent a lot of time teaching poetry inside the sort of military medical space. And so it's like the most Western medicine kind of model that there is, right?
Yeah.
The most evidence-based. And I would just like really get myself worked up around like proof must be provided in the language of the doubter, right? Like I have to convince them in their words. I have to learn their language, and I have to find a way to like, you know, compare poetry to pills or to, you know, like what, how can we show this in this way and use this metric when in fact that metric is inferior and just like not enough.
So much of what passes for empirical science, particularly in the field of mental health, is based on assigning numbers to someone's like reported subjective inner experience or what someone else thinks they're observing from the outside. And then comparing, say, oh, well, someone was at like a 4 and then they're at a 6 now. What like whatever that means. And these, yeah, and there being actually no genetic or biomarkers for these like mental health disorders. They're just collections of symptoms. Sort of doctors are giving, you know, assigning names to and diagnoses to so that people can try to get some help within like a large system that needs some way to sort of deal with that, right? So we know why it exists.
Yeah.
But to confuse that with what's really going on, or that like to imagine we have real knowledge now, is pretty crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. And when I started to move away from that, I started to think like, how about when people tell us how they feel, we believe them. And perhaps that just that believing them is the medicine, right? Is the like the thing that allows us then to all believe ourselves.
I think one of the most medicinal things about poetry is like the cure for literalism. Like it really just invites you to let go of even a way of using language as like words themselves as these like prisons that kind of lock in this denotative meaning and have one meaning. Instead, we go like, oh, well, words are just portals. They're like doors we can open, and we can ask questions using words that like that take us into explorations and places we never otherwise would have gone to. And now I've come out of this sort of like rigid way of looking at myself and the world. And it's now instead I'm living in a world of possibility and where like the fundamental, the one thing you can do is to just try to stay receptive and to stay open rather than being locked in that way of perceiving and communicating about the world. That's all about like, well, this is what I know for sure. You know, we're going to like stay over here. Instead, it's like poetry will just like turn on the wonder engines. It like, it teaches you how to practice awe and attention, like exquisite attention to something that you're just, I don't know, that's arising in your personal experience or field, and just see where that takes you. And it animates the world. I mean, it really is like a profound medicine, particularly in like Western, you know, white Western culture, you know?
Yeah, a wonder engine. It's such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful way to describe poetry. You know, Audrey Rich has this line that I had up on my wall for a very long time. Poems are like dreams. In them, you put what you don't know, you know? And I would think sometimes about like a poem being this pathway to discovering something, and I'd sit down, I'd know I needed to write something. Can you like what has poetry been for you in that space?
Oh, well, I thought about it a lot in terms of my development of intuition or even my development of like a theory of mind, I often had the experience when I was younger, and this is still true, of writing a poem and thinking that I knew what it meant, like thinking I knew what I was writing about. In the moment, I was pretty clear this, I was writing a poem about whatever. And then a year later, like reading that poem and being like, whoa, like a year later, more information has been revealed. And now I realize that these poems are like, it's like I was just dropping a direct line to my unconscious mind and writing about things that I did know, but did not consciously know that I knew.
Do you think that intuition is this sort of like part of yourself that's emerging, that you're like from somewhere deep inside you that's like just trying to poke its head out? That's, you know, that unconscious that you really can't see, just deciding to like break the...
I think intuition is this word that we give to like actually a pretty wide variety of things and ways in which we are perceiving, but like not in a conscious, rational, cognitive way. Sometimes I am, you know, coming to a choice I have to make or something. Maybe I've even just been asked to do something and I'm not quite sure if I want to do it, or maybe I feel some conflict about it. There's a part of me that does and a part of me that doesn't. And so whenever you start to visit those like points of like, it's like, oh, well, okay, what is this? I have developed this, you know, relationship with my, first of all, just like my physical body, like my organism, so that I can just like put a hand on my heart and a hand on my solar plexus and just tune into my body. Now, I can't ask my body, like, what should I do in 5 years? Like, what's my body? What's my career move? But I can't ask it like complex questions, but I can ask it yes or no questions about like a choice that's very much present. And I can say, well, okay, I feel conflicted about this. I'm going to tune into my body and just like wait until I feel connected with myself. And then I'm going to ask my body, like, do you want to do this? Is this a yes? I'm either going to feel a kind of wanting to go toward, my body will want to go towards it, or I will feel myself pulling away from it. And if I allow my body to fully participate in my decisions, I don't always know why. it's like once, you know, it's saying yes or no to what it's saying yes or no to. But if I ignore what my body says and decide to override that because I just like, I've got some like idea, I got some ego agenda or some mental picture of something. And I think like, but I should want to do this or this should, you know, so I override my body's signals and I do it anyway. I always, always regret it. If I listen to my body, I don't always, you know why my body, like why that, what the wisdom was there. But I don't need to know. Like things go smoothly. It's like I meet less resistance in my life when I am allowing my body to participate, this kind of like non-rational way of making decisions. And that's just one thing that we would call intuition. There's so many other ways in which we are like accessing these different ways of perceiving what I sort of think of as like my entire self, as opposed to the limited like 10% of my conscious mind that I sort of have like awareness of in the moment and can control. You know, all the information coming from our autonomic nervous system is all arriving beneath the level of conscious cognition. We wouldn't be able to function if we sort of had to consciously process all the information we were taking mm-hmm. in at all of the time.
Yeah.
So we are getting so much information that like in this other way, in ways that like we can't possibly know that we know. Our intuition also communicates to us through dreams. A lot of people have relationships with their dreams. that's similar to poetry. It's like, it provides this, just this kind of like ongoing direct encounter with like the raw material. And you might be like, God, why am I having all of these fucked up dreams about, you know, whatever it is, if there's a part of the body in the dream that's like wounded, or if there, you know, it can kind of go on. It starts to, the body knows already, but that knowledge is what we would say unconscious, right? But when it's ready, it will start to emerge. And that emergence into consciousness, that subconscious territory, we'll say, that's like just somewhere in between, is where all this like intuitive stimuli is like being generated, that we can only kind of, we can't read that information literally, and you can't measure it empirically. Dreams don't literally mean anything. So what we have to develop are these other ways of knowing, like this poetic, intuitive, sometimes I call it, it's like moon, you know, it's just like moon knowledge. It's like, what if you were in a dark room, a room where the lights had been turned off, and you have to cross the room to get to the door on the other side, but you don't have sight? How are you going to get across the room? You're going to feel your way across. You're not just going to stand there, you know, you're going to... Yeah. But this kind of like feeling your way through the dark is a very different way of knowing.
I'm thinking about, there was, and both Amelia and I highlighted this line about the difference between telling the difference between intuition and fear.
Yeah.
And I think about how like really traumatic experiences completely fuck with your relationship with yourself, right? Like for a million reasons. But like post-traumatic stress will have you like having these like sort of nightmares or these experiences of fear that maybe aren't rooted in what's really here. And I know that a lot of the members of our community have been sort of feeling their way back to trusting themselves as a result of these experiences. I just would love to hear like what you have to say or wonder or think about that.
I am a professional somatic trauma therapist. It's what I do, like the majority of my sort of work day is I get to sit with people who are still just working on healing from all manner of trauma. And I always say like the difference between trauma and PTSD, which we have to kind of learn pretty early in our healing process, which is that like trauma in and of itself doesn't exist inside of a particular event or experience. It's our response to it. And what most of what we call trauma is just, it's something that was extremely overwhelming to us in the moment. Something that overwhelmed our actual physical ability to sort of process. And it could be because it was dangerous and life-threatening, but it doesn't have to be that. I mean, all, you know, it's a very individual thing, what I'm going to find overwhelming versus what someone else is going to find very overwhelming. And when we have these experiences of overwhelm, and in some fundamental way, we're like left alone with it. There's like, yeah, there's just some part of us that has to carry it alone. That's one of the conditions that starts to like set up the likelihood of PTSD.
Mm.
We are built to experience trauma and overwhelm and like, and recover and keep going. But like the recovery involves this like coming together with a trusted person or our community and saying, oh my God, this thing happened. And empathetic listeners sort of surround us and go, oh my God, this thing happened. And we somehow, right, just in that process of someone else holding it with me, our nervous systems are built to link up together. And it's like, what might be too much for my individual circuit I can connect up with other people, and suddenly our capacity just like super expands. And a group of people can process like a big wave in a way that an individual just like isn't going to be able to. And whatever is too overwhelming, like whatever is too big for me really in the moment to survive, my psyche is going to like cut that out. It's going to sort of like dampen that connection and disconnect me from that so I can keep functioning. PTSD comes both from having to carry those experiences alone and in some kind of actual disconnection where I can't connect with other people to help me process something. The difference in the moment, like when I'm checking in with myself, like, oof, is this just a trauma or is this something a little bit more in the realm of PTSD? I just ask myself this one question, which is like, am I open to having a new experience right now? And sometimes the answer is no. If there's something going on that's triggering a past experience that was traumatic for me, and I'm not done processing that, I'm not going to be able to have a new experience right now in the moment. And if the answer is yes, and like, ugh, well, what happened was not fucking great, and I don't want it to happen again, but I do feel open to having a new experience right now, then it's not, you know, that's when we're like that window where it's like, oh, it's not, we're starting to move out of what we might call post-traumatic stress disorder. Because trauma does that thing. It really interrupts our ability to be fully present and take in new information, like, and actually receive. So when we're healing, we're really learning how to come back into the here and the now. And like try to like turn all the circuits that had to get turned off and disconnected because they were overwhelmed. We just want to so lovingly turn those back on. And we want to turn those back on in the direction of like pleasure and resources. You know, a lot of poetry is so good for this. It's like, let's just like write poems about what we love, like what feels good. And slowly but surely, we can start to come back to ourselves in this way. It's a process to come back into the present and come back into the body and start to find all the places of safety within you. Because, you know, intuition is going to, right, might be just an open channel through which you're sensing everything. Some of which is you re-experiencing something from the past, or maybe you're experiencing, I was thinking about this when I was reading the book a lot. There's folks out there that are like, here's how you know what your intuition is, because when it's your intuitive voice, you're just going to relax, your whole body's going to relax. And I was like, wow, that is not my experience, because intuition, your intuition might be nudging you in the direction of your healing and your growth. And it might be asking you to go to places that are very scary and uncomfortable. And so it might be activating a lot of fear as it comes online. And that question of like, oof, what is my fear and what is my intuition is something that needs to be just like so lovingly sat with for a while in order to truly discern for you, right? I know when I was having the experience I wrote about in the book, I could barely tolerate listening to the voice that told me to leave that relationship. I could think about it like for a minute and then I'd panic and I wouldn't be able to think about it anymore. The next time I thought about it, I could tolerate thinking about it a little bit longer and like a little bit, but it took a while before I could go like, okay, this is really big, but I think I can just tolerate like hearing this voice and listening to what I'm telling me. And in that particular way, there was another voice of fear that was just like a fear of change. you know, it was just like, and a fear of hurting other people, like so many things, a fear of disappointing others. Yeah. And that's a lot to overcome, you know, like, but we're built for that. There's like, I do feel like life hands you a crucible or two where like you are meant to finally get miserable enough in some way that, right? That it in its own way, like that's what helps you locate your power. Nobody can give you your power. You have to do it. You have to just somehow find yourself in such, you know, in a crazy stuck place. And that's that, like, you know, while we have these inner defenses that disconnect us and do all of that to keep us safe, we also have inner defenses that promote wholeness. And often this like intuitive voice is coming from that place eventually, which is like, you know, we disconnected you to keep you safe, but like, that's not what we're doing anymore. It's time to bring this back online.
As scary as it may be.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
And, you know, light, I do feel like that transition to adulthood, like your late 20s and your early 30s is so powerful because usually that's the first time that the limitation of time is really like hitting home. You're like, oh my God, in my 20s, I felt like I really had so much time to figure it out. There was just like a feeling of like, oh, I can tell this is not quite right, but it's okay, right? You're there in your 20s. A big part of what's important for your growth is experimenting and making mistakes, and like failure is very holy in this way. And suddenly as you get like a little bit older, you start to feel that pressure build of like, oh my God, I do not have all of the time to figure it out. And you start just that internal pressure starts to build. And that just means like, it's time. If there's any way in which you've been like living your life that is out of alignment with your authentic self, then you're going to start, you know, you're going to start feeling it.
Sort of that tolerance too, as you get older, yeah. We talk about like sort of the timing and like wisdom is a very real thing. I feel like as we get older, you talk about like late 20s, early 30s being a sort of stage of life. We have like books for parenting kids from like, you know, age like 1 to 18, and then it's like now they're adults, which has not been my experience. Like 30 was a real thing for me, 40 is a whole nother thing for me, but it seems like it's a life stage for people, you know, other people my age. And I see my mom and her friends being like in their 70s, and this is a particular time of sort of this muscle getting sharpened or strengthened.
But it is very real. Development continues like throughout our life, and we have different needs and we outgrow things, and it's uncomfortable. There's this beautiful depth psychologist named Marianne Woodman who used to say that the idea is like, an acorn already has all of the instructions inside of it to become an oak tree. And that's all of us. Like each of us is an acorn, and we contain inside of us already all of the instructions and knowledge to become exactly who we're meant to become and who we are. And Marianne would say, the thing is, you have to learn to like love the acorn before you've ever even heard of an oak tree. Forget about the oak tree. Like, love the acorn. Over and over, I think I get invited. This growth process that is happening invites me to trust like a little bit more. Just like, it's like, ah, Mindy, could you relax just a little bit and trust a little bit more? Because life and becoming and evolution, these are emergent processes and they're intelligent processes, but we're probably only ever going to be able to see like 5 feet in front of us, you know? We're not going to be able to use that other way of knowing, that like solar consciousness, that empirical knowledge, that measurement. We can't use that way of knowing to help us be. There's no map. Like, there's nothing to study and measure in that way. We got to like build the plane as we're flying it. It's another thing I say a lot. It's terrifying. So when something like when life is terrifying, but like maybe in a good way, like in a way that's pushing you to grow, the alternative to being just scared out of your mind and in a way that sort of makes you stay in one place or run in the opposite direction from your life. Like the other position you can take that you could try is trust. You could just check it out. And when I'm really afraid, I go, whew. First of all, I just acknowledge it like, oh, I'm really afraid and that's okay. It's like, maybe it's healthy fear. Like, and would it be possible? It's like the voice of my intuition, Mindy, would it be possible to trust us like a little bit more than you are right now?
I just love that idea of asking yourself that, like, what does it do a little bit? Like this incremental approach is so beautiful and like really inviting, you know, because it doesn't, you're not saying like, okay, well, it's not, we're going to start by jumping out of a plane. And, you know, but it's just sort of like,
I mean, that's going to happen to you in life. Sometimes you're going to get like pushed off the cliff, but you don't have to invite that kind of change into your life. Right.
It's not that to be the starting point. And the last question, how did this, like being a part of this book and, you know, maybe being part of readings and reading the book, like how did it hone or change your relationship to intuition? Or your idea of it?
I, you know, personally, by reading the book and being a part of it, I do feel like each writer in this book gives so generously of themselves. They share something really specific and personal, and it's like each one is a new handle to kind of grasp a little bit. That taught me something brand new about intuition that I hadn't thought of in that way before. They really are that different. It's extremely, what I'm trying to say is extremely permission giving to see, to read how many different incredible, like objectively incredible people, are understanding it and understanding their own channels of perception and understanding where they've been disconnected to it and how, and opposite, how they've learned how their own intelligence works and how to kind of, you know, be in alignment with it is very inspiring. And I do think that listening in the dark is arriving at a moment, right? It got published last year and it's arriving at a moment where we are in so many different collective crises. And when we talked about how these crucibles sort of arrive in our own personal life that help us like see the ways we're not living in alignment and like make the changes we need to make and face our fears and kind of get on board. And that is happening for us collectively, like all over the place. And we're not going to be able to just use this kind of, you know, this one way of knowing to get through this. The problems are too complex. I mean, we're just talking about the chaos of like massive living systems so that we can't know, for example, what the cause and effect is going to be of any one action. And there's so much happening at once. The thing that might be the most helpful thing is as many of us as possible connecting to our own intuitive intelligence and connecting to our own power. And while there are always forces that are larger than us and out of our control, also we can always locate our power and we can always locate our intuition. And in that process, I sort of have this, I get this feeling that we just like need everybody's gifts. We just need everybody's gifts. I get emotional thinking about it. And that's how we're going to get through this. But we need people to connect with themselves and connect with their power and develop their gifts and get to the place where they can start meaningfully, you know, participating. And in this like kind of new era of collective intelligence and leadership, where we're, you know, we need to leave behind the heroic fantasies of the sort of Western individualism. And we also, right, we're also like healing from these really profound disconnects, where our disconnection from the body and feeling and the devaluing of that, in order to even know what we're doing, we have to like re-sensitize. We have to like get to the place where we can feel our way across this like dark abyss together. So I think this book, not only gave me just like lots of personal new stories and ways to think about it, it also feels like it is an important invitation, like at this time, to like get in the game, you know? Yeah. You're out there listening. You have gifts that the rest of us need. You have like unique gifts and we need you to get on it if you think you might be ready to do that. Come find us in this dark room. Bring us.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
I feel like we came into this with already so many things to think about. I feel like I'm leaving it with even more to keep thinking about. So thank you. That's a real gift.
I'm glad I got introduced to you and your organization and your work. Thanks for also just doing that work. You know what I mean? Like creating communities of hope. I really think that real resilience is not individual strength. It's like community connectedness and well-being, period.
Thanks for listening to our interview with Dr. Mindy Netafi. Keep your eyes on the podcast feed because in 2 weeks, we'll be releasing a discussion episode of Listening in the Dark featuring Nisha Gupta, Amber Flame, and Tarfia Faizula. We also want to hear what you think about Listening in the Dark, so email us at cbawloves@cbaw.org. CBAW Loves is a community-building artworks podcast produced by Amelia Bain.
CBAW is committed to mission belonging, reconnecting veterans with their communities.
For more information, visit our website, www.cbaw.org.